Let me ask you something before we get going. Have you ever climbed up to 10, 11,000 feet on a beautiful clear day, felt absolutely fine, and figured you could just keep going? The airplane's still climbing, the view keeps getting better, and there's no line painted in the sky that says, "Stop here." That's exactly the problem. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today, we're going to talk about one of those regulations that sounds boring on paper and turns out to be about the thing sitting between your ears. We're talking about supplemental oxygen, Federal Aviation Regulation 91.211. And more importantly, we're going to talk about why the air up high quietly lies to you, and how this one little rule is written to save you from a decision you won't even know you're making badly. Let's walk through this together. Before we climb into it, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, the ones you worked hard for. AviationSoul.com. Okay, oxygen. Here's the thing, nobody really feels until it's happening to them. The air up high is still about 21% oxygen, same as it is on the ground. That never changes. What changes is the pressure. As you climb, the atmosphere thins out, the pressure drops, and even though the percentage of oxygen is the same, there's less of it packed into every breath you take. Your lungs are pulling in air, but they're getting less and less of what your body actually needs. We call that hypoxia. Not enough oxygen getting to your tissues, and the specific flavor we care about in the cockpit is called hypoxic hypoxia, which just means not enough oxygen available to begin with because you're up where the air is thin. Now, here's what makes it dangerous. And I want you to really sit with this one. Hypoxia does not hurt. It doesn't feel like drowning. It doesn't feel like holding your breath. There's no alarm, no gasping, no panic. In fact, one of the classic early symptoms is a feeling of well-being. Euphoria. You feel great. You feel like everything's fine and maybe even a little better than fine. Your judgment goes soft, your reaction time stretches out, your vision starts to narrow and dull, especially your color vision, and the whole time your brain is telling you that you are absolutely nailing it. The organ you would use to recognize the problem is the exact organ being starved. That's the trap. You can't think your way out of it because thinking is the first thing to go. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The regulation is not there because the FAA thinks you're fragile. It's there because the failure mode is invisible. You will not get a warning light. So, the rule has to be the warning light. So, let's get into what 91.211 actually says. And I promise you, once you understand why each number is where it is, you will never forget it. There are three altitudes that matter. And they're all measured as cabin pressure altitude, which for most of us flying unpressurized airplanes just means your actual altitude, what the altimeter reads when it's set correctly. If you're flying something pressurized, it means the altitude your cabin thinks it's at, which is a different conversation. For today, most of us, it's just your altitude. The first number is 12,500 feet. Here's the rule. Between 12,500 feet and 14,000 feet, the required minimum flight crew, that's the pilot flying, must use supplemental oxygen for any portion of the flight at those altitudes that lasts longer than 30 minutes. Read that again in your head. It's not the moment you cross 12,500. It's when you've been above 12,500 for more than 30 minutes. The regulation gives you a 30-minute window. You can climb through that band, level briefly, do what you need to do. But if you're going to sit up there in that layer for longer than half an hour, the required crew is on oxygen, full stop. Why 30 minutes? Because that's roughly the window where, for most healthy people, the effects are creeping in slowly enough that a short exposure is manageable, but a long one is not. It's a compromise built into the reg. It is not a promise that you're fine for 29 minutes. Keep that in mind. The second number is 14,000 feet. Above 14,000 feet. The required minimum flight crew must use supplemental oxygen the entire time, no 30-minute grace period, no window. The moment you're above 14,000, the pilot's on oxygen period. The FAA looked at that altitude and basically said, there's no safe casual exposure here for the person flying the airplane. Done. And the third number is 15,000 feet. Above 15,000 feet, you have to provide supplemental oxygen to each occupant of the aircraft, every person on board. Now notice the wording changed. At 12, 5, and at 14, the rule is about the crew, the people flying. At 15,000, it becomes about everybody, and specifically the word is provide. You must provide it to your passengers. The regulation stops short of saying you have to strap it to their faces. Your passengers, technically, can decline to use it. But you, the pilot in command, are required to make it available to every soul on board. So let's put those three together, because there's a rhythm to them that makes them stick. 12.5 for 30 minutes, crew uses it. 14,000, crew uses it, all the time. 15,000, everybody gets it provided. Crew, everybody. 30 minutes, always provide. That's the whole regulation in a breath. Now here's where I want to shift from the letter of the law to the spirit of it, because this is a segment about being a better pilot, not just a legal one. Those numbers are minimums. They are the floor, not the ceiling of good judgment. The FAA wrote them for the average healthy person at rest. You are frequently not at rest. You might be tired. You might be a little dehydrated because you didn't want to deal with a bathroom stop on a long cross country. You might have had a cold last week. You might be a smoker, which effectively raises your physiological altitude before you ever leave the ground because carbon monoxide is already taking up seats on your red blood cells. Every one of those things lowers the altitude where hypoxia starts nibbling at you. So here's the practical takeaway, and this is the one I want you to carry into the airplane. A lot of experienced pilots, myself included, will tell you that on any flight above 10,000 feet and absolutely on any night flight above 5,000 feet, you should think seriously about oxygen, even though the regulation doesn't require it yet. Why night? Because your eyes are enormous oxygen consumers, and your night vision is one of the very first things to degrade when oxygen drops. There's good evidence that your night vision starts measurably suffering as low as 5,000 feet. You won't notice. Of course you won't. That's the theme of the entire show today. You never notice. But the guy who flies with a pulse oximeter and a cannula at night sees things the guy without one doesn't. That's not me telling you to go buy a bottle for a 2,000-foot pattern hop. It's me telling you that the legal minimum and the smart minimum are two different altitudes, and the gap between them is where a lot of quiet, unexplained mistakes live. Let me give you a scenario. This is the kind of thing that actually happens. You're flying across country out west. Maybe you're going over some high terrain, and you decide to cruise at 13,500 feet to give yourself comfortable margins over the rocks and stay in smooth air. Perfectly reasonable altitude. Legal to be there? You settle in, the autopilot's holding it beautifully. You've got a tailwind, life is good. 40 minutes go by. Now legally, 20 minutes ago you crossed into oxygen requiring territory because you've been above 12.5 for more than 30 minutes without it. But forget the legality for a second. Physiologically, what's happening to you? Your color vision is a little washed out, but you have nothing to compare it to. Your math is a little slower. So when you go to recompute your fuel and your ground speed, you fumble it and you don't catch the error. You feel relaxed, content even. And you're making small decisions, one after another, at maybe 80% of your normal sharpness, and you have zero ability to detect that you're at 80%. That is the accident chain forming in total silence. Not a dramatic failure. A slow dumbing down. And then something small goes wrong. Weather ahead, a rough running engine, a radio call you need to parse quickly, and you meet it with a brain that's been quietly throttled back for the last half hour. The oxygen bottle doesn't just keep you legal in that scenario. It keeps you, you. So let's talk about the how, because knowing the rule is one thing and being equipped is another. The simplest setup for most light aircraft pilots is a portable oxygen system, a small aluminum or composite bottle, a regulator, and a delivery device. For the altitudes we're talking about in 91.211 up in the teens, the common delivery device is a nasal cannula. The little soft prongs that sit in your nostrils, same idea you've seen in a hospital. Cannulas are comfortable and efficient, and the FAA generally accepts them up to 18,000 feet. Above 18,000, you move to a mask, because up there you need the ability to deliver higher concentrations and the cannula can't keep up. The really smart piece of gear to pair with it is a pulse oximeter. It's that little clip that goes on your fingertip and reads your blood oxygen saturation. They cost almost nothing now. On the ground at sea level, you're probably reading somewhere in the high 90s. As you climb, you watch that number, and when it starts sliding down toward the low 90s or below, that's your objective, honest, does not lee signal to get on the oxygen. It takes the guesswork and the euphoria right out of it. Your brain will tell you you're fine. The oximeter tells you the truth. I trust the little clip over my own feelings every single time. One more practical note, oxygen systems have to be maintained. The bottle has to actually be filled, and aviation oxygen is what you want. Not welding oxygen, not medical oxygen, aviation grade. Because moisture control matters when you're going to cold altitudes and you don't want ice forming in the system. Check your duration. Know how many liters per minute your regulator is flowing and roughly how long your bottle lasts at that flow. Running out of oxygen halfway through the high part of a flight is its own kind of problem. Now, if you're a student or a newer pilot thinking, I fly a trainer, I never go above 8,000 feet. Why does any of this matter to me? Here's why. The airman certification standards expect you to understand aeromedical factors, and hypoxia is right there in the standards. The examiner is looking for you to explain the symptoms, name the altitudes in 91.211, and, more than reciting numbers, demonstrate that you understand why this is a real hazard and not just trivia. If you can explain to your examiner that hypoxia's most dangerous feature is that it feels good and hides itself, you've shown them the understanding they actually want to see. Anybody can memorize 12, 5, 14, 15. The examiner wants to know that you get it. And here's the honest part, because I promised you honesty on this show. Learning all of this is a lot. Aeromedical factors. The regs, the systems, the gear, it piles up, and flying is already hard enough and expensive enough without one more thing to buy and one more number to remember. I know, but this is one of those areas where the knowledge is cheap and the ignorance is expensive. A pulse oximeter is the price of a couple of hamburgers. The alternative is trusting a brain that's specifically designed to reassure you right up until the moment it stops working properly. So let's bring it home with the takeaways you can use on your very next flight. 1. Know the three numbers cold, 12,500 crew on oxygen after 30 minutes, 14,000 crew on oxygen the whole time, 15,000 oxygen provided to everyone aboard. 2. Treat those as the legal floor, not your personal limit. Above 10,000 in the day, above 5,000 at night, start thinking about it seriously, especially if you're tired, sick, or a smoker. 3. Fly with a pulse oximeter and believe it over your own feelings, because hypoxia's whole trick is that you feel fine. And 4. If you own or rent something that'll carry you up into the teens, know your oxygen system before you need it. Filled, aviation grade, right delivery device for the altitude, and enough duration for the flight you're actually flying. The regulation is 91.211, and the details we walk through come straight from the FAA's own regulations and the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, which lays out the physiology beautifully if you want to read more. You can always find us at radiohangar.com. Here's the last thought I'll leave you with. Most of the hazards we train for announce themselves. The engine gets rough, the weather looks ugly, the airplane tells you something's wrong. This one doesn't. This one just makes you a little worse and a little happier about it. So put the number on your side of the equation and go fly smart up there. I'm Pattern, keep the shiny side up, and I'll see you next time.